breath before we start.
I kept putting quarters into a 30-minute meter. I couldn't figure out why it wasn't going any place.
So does that mean after 30 minutes you're going to get back up and put there another quarter?
Monday, February 12th, and first I'll call for approval of the minutes.
I have just one correction, and that is at the bottom of the first page where it indicates I abstained, I believe I voted aye.
Did you?
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you voted aye.
Yeah, so it was the unanimous of those folks who were able to vote.
Any other corrections?
Okay. As amended.
Approval of the minutes as amended has been moved. Is there a second? In favor?
Aye.
The order of the agenda.
Madam Chair, I neglected to put the inquiry. Inquiry updates on the agenda, so I would ask that you insert that before whole business.
Okay.
What is that?
The ethics inquiries that I've received since the last meeting.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Item number 5, should say review draft 2017 annual report.
Good point.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Then the order of the agenda is set. Then with the changes. All right, we'll go on then to... I'm having a hard time. My eyes got too watery. There. Okay. All right. And Mr. Atkins, do you want to deal with any inquiries that may come your way?
I may tend to. And for Mr. Luce's benefit, and Jason joins us as the new city attorney. He'll take over on Saturday after I leave on Friday. The first line of defense, if you please, or inquiry on matters of ethics that usually involves the city attorney's office. Employees will call, or other officials will call my office and ask, can I do this, can I accept that? And ever since day one that this board was created, the board has asked that I review those types of inquiries whenever the board meets, primarily to give the board an idea as to the issues that are out there and the types of questions that I have to deal with. So you can maintain, if you will, a hand on the pulse of these types of questions. And I've only had one since we last met, and it's a familiar one. The question is, can a company that has a contractual relationship with the city offer to pay travel, food, and lodging for one of the city's employees to participate in a peer group review of one of the company's customers' issues? And as I have in the past, I've said no. Once that company has a contractual relationship with the city, any attempt to pay for expenses to get members of that city organization to appear on behalf of the company would give the appearance of a conflict of interest and should be avoided. That's the only inquiry I have received.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll move on to item number 4. This is a regular meeting, isn't it?
It is.
And so, therefore, we should be... Before the approval of the minutes, really, I should have set forth the comment period. Didn't on the comment period. I have it in my notes. Okay.
Is there any, we will open the comment, open comment period at this point, which, you know, is still rather new to us, so it doesn't always just pop up right away to break. Any commentary? Yes.
Yes, okay, I request permission to speak for about 3.5 minutes, which is less than a full.
Okay. Sure. Do speak up. You know, the acoustic in here is not great.
I am. For the following reasons, I disagree with the inability to permit the complaint regarding inappropriate solicitation of a homeowner to sell their property for development to move forward based upon Chapter 13.10, Subdivision 4, which simply states that the board may not consider violations that occurred more than a year before the date of the filing of the complaint. That has to do with the Bransford complaint. My first objection relates to the wording of the rule and that the statement is arbitrary and capricious because it fails to consider that a violation might not even be discovered before the one-year time period lapses. Here's a hypothetical to explain my position. A board member is offered a free trip to Hawaii by a contractor who wants a variance to build an office building in a residential area. The board member offers to influence the decision-making process by promoting the construction throughout the affected community and with fellow board members. He attends a number of meetings with the community and the board, presenting a rosy picture of advantages to having a new office building in the community. 1 year and 1 day after the last committee meeting, it comes to light that the trip to Hawaii was offered as a quid pro quo for the board member's assistance. Most people would say that this action would warrant an ethics investigation. However, by the current rule, this board would not be able to hear the complaint because a one-year period had already passed. How does that make any sense whatsoever? This rule sets up an unduly onerous standard as it does not allow for the fact that actual knowledge of a violation could occur far after the one-year period had passed. Indeed, statutes of this sort have language that allows for a complaint to be brought based upon the date that the person first learns of the improper conduct. In other words, the rule should read, allegations of ethical violations must be brought to the attention of the board within 1 year after the complaint knew or should have known of the violation. The board will not consider any violation that falls outside this period. Such language would allow for those instances where the violations remain unknown for periods that exceed the one-year limitation. The rule in question does not provide for such occurrences and should be deemed to be unduly vague and arbitrary and not protective of the rights of our citizens to challenge improper conduct by our elected officials. My second objection is that even if you apply the rule as it currently reads, it makes no sense. The rule prohibits the consideration of violations which presupposes that some kind of ethical conduct has already occurred. Indeed, how do you know that a violation has occurred or the date of its occurrence without holding a hearing to make those determinations in the first place, which means you would have to hold a hearing every time in a time-barred situation. And my final objection is that a one-year statute for pursuing an ethical violation is an unreasonably short period of time and not based upon any kind of legal precedent. Under Minnesota law, there are no statutes that provide for a one-year limitation, according to my knowledge. In the end, isn't it more important to review the evidence to ensure that the correct decision is made regarding councilman's conduct? This rule arbitrarily cuts off an investigation into that conduct. Our community deserves to know whether the allegations are true or not true, so that they can make an informed decision about such conduct the next time they are asked to cast their vote. And on a personal level, I just want to say that when Michael came with my ethics complaint and started out with, I do not like Mary Mario, and she feels the same way, that's not true. I have nothing against Michael Wojcik as a person, okay? My thing has always been behavior. And I would like very much to sit next to him at dinner sometime, and we'd probably have a very nice, enjoyable dinner. But it's behavior that I go by, so I can divorce the person from the behavior. And I don't want people to think that I'm doing a vendetta against him, okay? Thank you.
Mary, I think you had your hand up first.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to say, first of all, I like Michael and I also like Barry Avdale, so I'm not going to get into so much about that case. I am concerned, though, about somewhat about the process that's going on now with the Ethics Board, where I'm most concerned about transparency and making sure that speech is not going to be restricted in an unfair way. And I find sometimes we get involved in legalisms and then I think we lose track of the forest for the trees. I just think we're losing the whole point that about free discourse and free speech. And sometimes people might say things that they might be slightly off, but I don't think we should necessarily rule that they're unethical. And I just think we have to be very, very careful before we sort of make people so scared about how they speak that it's going to actually really change the nature of speech and freedom of speech. I don't think people should be rude. I don't think they should be unethical. On the other hand, I really think we have to be careful that we're not overly legalistic to the point where we're actually hurting speech itself. Thank you.
Seven, yes.
Hi, yes. My name is Paula Harden. I've been paying attention to politics now for a short time, and I am sorry to say that I have been appalled by this ethics board. The forced recusal of people when the whole point of having somebody be on the board is that they're capable of making an objective assessment. The concept of a councilman not being able to be enthusiastic about something without it becoming, you know, prejudicial, you know, one way or the other. I know of a case personally that I have chosen not to bring before the ethics board where it was a clear violation of ethics, but on the balance, the job the person was doing was so superior to the temporary moment of error that it would be really a loss to the city to pursue. And I believe from my experience paying attention to this ethics committee, in part because of my debate about that particular happenstance, this board is acting as a kangaroo court. It is being used in a retaliatory method by people who can't pursue justice through legal means and without due process and without appellate level chains, and I'm just appalled. I think you're having a much more severe effect on the capacity of any of the people in the city to do their jobs for fear that some disgruntled person is going to come up and say, oh, well, that was unethical. You know, you said something or another at a party that somebody told me, and so now I know that you're in the bed with the developers or the real estate people. I mean, there's no end of it. So I beg you, please rethink the role of the ethics board and not deal in slanderous, libelous contentions as what is clearly vengeance as opposed to a legitimate concern. I think we need to give the benefit of the doubt to the council members that they have the best interests of the city at heart. I believe that you guys have the best interests of the city at heart. And I just am afraid that the system has broken a little bit, and you need to step back and rethink how you're allowing complaints to come forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Did anyone else wish to make any comments? Then we will move into the rest of our agenda. Okay. Did we take up the minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Okay, yep. So we're all set there.
Could I just, before we go to anything,
yes,
could I just make a comment? I wouldn't want to I wouldn't want it misunderstood when we don't respond to public comments that we're disregarding those public comments. I don't think that it contemplates a give and take, you know, because that, you know, would get beyond our meeting agenda. But I hope that it's understood that we appreciate public comments, even though we may not respond immediately. Those are the kinds of comments that may well lead to inclusion in future agendas, matters that we should take up. So I just didn't want to misunderstand that our silence means ignorance or disregarding it. Thank you.
Okay. We will then move into item number 4. Whole business. First sub-item there is review the findings of fact from the hearing. And again, noting that the findings is not public data, and that therefore in the discussion that we must bear that in mind as far as names and other things that can lead to breaking the issue about something not being public yet. Terry Weiss does that so much more visibly. Okay, so can we move into that item now?
As a corollary to that, what are we to do with the investigation report, the hard copy of the investigation report that we've all received?
The tradition is that once you're done with it, you return it to my office, and we will take care of it in terms of disposal.
Thank you.
Good question. Okay. Jared?
Well, very briefly, after the hearing finished, you folks indicated that we should follow the investigator's three-pronged dichotomy in terms of setting out the three issues as the investigator saw them. And that's what I did. You had reached consensus as to the first two and asked for options on the second, on the third one, which is what I did. And it comes now back before you.
Excuse me, Chair. At this point, I guess I am going to turn the chairmanship over to Lynn.
Okay.
Okay.
And so the findings were drafted with those two consensus in mind, as well as the two options that you asked for. You're not bound by anything, including the two points that you reached consensus on at the last meeting. So it's up to you where you want to go from here. Jose, you were not here for the hearing, but I believe you have undertaken to familiarize yourself with this issue.
Yes, I read the report and was provided a two compact discs for the recording of the last meeting.
So at this point, as we say in the basketball world, the ball is in your court.
Can we decide that today our objective is to come up with some with one of the options that was cited by Mr. Atkins in his fact findings document? Is that agreeable?
Yes.
Okay. Right, then I would open the floor for discussion. Actually, I have a question, and it's open to anybody that would like to contribute to the resolution of it. Restricted development final plan. What does that mean?
A restricted development is like a conditional use permit in that it allows a development that is otherwise not permitted in a particular area to occur. And it usually goes through a preliminary plan review and a final plan review. So there's a two-step process by the council, by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and by the council before it reaches final approval.
Okay. And that is strictly based on the construction of a set project. It doesn't necessarily bring into view other issues that we have been contemplating throughout this investigation.
Well, each has its own set of criteria that both the Planning and Zoning Commission and the council must apply, and if needed, put some conditions of approval on so that it meets the criteria. And the criteria can be compatibility, sufficient parking, sufficient open space. It may address views in terms of blocking the views. It just covers the canopy.
Okay.
Are you talking about the 2016 meeting?
Yes, in December 19th, when they unanimously passed the other plan.
Yeah, I had some questions, just as I was thinking about it. Whether, if that is so structured that there really isn't any wiggle room to get a personal opinion into it, or if it is open to
subjective.
Yeah. I know that's a hard question.
Well, there are criteria, and the criteria are in black and white. But that's the purpose of the public hearings, is to gather the information as to whether the project satisfies or fails to satisfy those criteria. And then the individual planning and zoning commissioners and council members will apply the criteria to what they just heard and come up with a decision. And so obviously there's some subjectivity. You may think the project is compatible. I may, hearing the same evidence, reach the contrary conclusion. But as long as it's related to the criteria, I, as a public lawyer, can defend that decision, whatever it may be. It's when you go beyond the criteria that we run into trouble.
I went back to review those minutes of the December 19th meeting, and under that particular segment of the council meeting, there were several members who commented. There's no indication of what their comments were in those minutes, but there was a period of time with the hearing, or with the council meeting, where members of the public were able to comment on that particular that point.
Is that the meeting that's the critical meeting here, or is it the September 16th meeting that is the critical
meeting
here?
That's the meeting I was talking about.
Yeah, this is the September 16th. This is the December.
Right.
When it was
this is the one where the September 16th, I'm wondering if it's so structured that it's either a yes or a no, and there's not any opinion that could be garnered from it. And if someone should accuse themselves if it's in their area, or not, depending. Yeah, it's just where my thinking is.
Are you referring to the September meeting or the December meeting?
September.
Thank you. May I ask the legal counsel another question before we engage in further discussion?
Yes.
It's a follow-up really to that same line of questioning with respect to the range of discretion and what that meeting is all about and what the obligations are of the council members at that meeting. What would be the consequences of a council decision to deny an application in the face of undeniable compliance with the applicable ordinance criteria?
It would subject the city to legal challenge. There are a number of court cases, both with the Minnesota Court of Appeals and the Minnesota Supreme Court, that have ruled that if an application satisfies the criteria, and there is essentially nothing in the record showing otherwise, and yet the approval bodies rejects the application, that is an act of arbitrariness and capriciousness.
Okay. The question was really rhetorical, I guess, at least on my part. In simple terms, it would subject the city to lawsuit.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And Terry, is that brought forth to the council? Are they reminded of that? Are they reminded of their responsibility in a vote when it is brought forth to the council?
Well, they were early on in my tenure. I'm happy to say that they were listening, and I think that most of them, if not all of them, understand that, because I've made that a very strong point. They cannot go beyond the criteria.
Right. So regardless of what the constituents might think, as long as the project satisfies those criteria, it's a possible, it legally should be an opportunity for the project to pass then.
Yes.
Okay. So the heart, we take the heart and soul out of it.
Well, I wouldn't go that far because I've been at hearings where neighbors have good evidence that apply to the criteria.
Right, yeah.
But and that can be considered.
Yeah.
It's when a governing approval body say, you know, you've met all the criteria, but we just don't think it's good for the city or it's not a good fit.
Yeah.
And for that reason, we're denied.
Wow, okay.
And it's happened across the state.
Sure. I can imagine. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. So I guess the question for me, this is tough, is are we looking at, for example, in our ethical practices, we have a document that every elected official signs indicating that a conflict of interest, if there's a conflict of interest, they will either refrain from commenting on it or they will recuse themselves in a vote. But yet, on the other side, then we have this project that went forth satisfying all the criteria, and so I guess, you know, there's and I saw you shaking your head. I think maybe you might be kind of thinking similarly there. Mr. Wojak voted for this project based on, as he mentioned to us in the investigation, the hearing, based on the fact that the project satisfied the criteria. So there's that piece, and then the other piece then is, did he violate the code of ethics by using certain terms that would lead one to believe that he was very favorable to it?
Yeah. I feel kind of ambivalent about it as well.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to think, you know, what if everything had been sort of switched? What if it, instead of being, sort of accused of using what may be construed as a positive connotation countenance around this project, what if he had portrayed something that seemed more negative and then it hadn't gone forward? I mean, would there be a preponderance of evidence that he had sort of swayed everything in that direction? I don't know.
But as long as it satisfies the criteria.
But there is some subjectivity to the criteria. So, you know, some of the stuff we were given in evidence, at least, was one of Wojak's blog posts where he goes through all the different criteria that they're being presented with. And certainly I assume to me, that doesn't know anything about traffic patterns of a proposed development, it will seem very objective. But I can imagine if you actually knew what that stuff was, it wouldn't be that hard to quibble with, well, they estimate it should be like that, but you know what, I think it's going to be like that.
Yeah.
So even though, you know, to sort of a layperson, I'm sure it is pretty objective, there wouldn't be any point in having the hearing if there wasn't subjectivity to it. And as well, you know, both you had told them, and even in Wojcik's, the blog post we were presented with, he mentions that it does have, forgetting the phrase off the tip of my tongue, but the phrase where you can't, like, say what you think about it. That certain kind of case that's being presented, where they're not just deciding on the rules, but applying the rules.
Well, is bias or prejudice?
No. The judicial...
Quasi-judicial?
So he has that expression there. So clearly, you know, I'm convinced he was aware of that, and he had that in the forefront of his mind. And even with the stuff represented, I certainly get the impression he was being pretty careful in the words that he chose and the countenance he chose to portray. And where I feel a little bit ambivalent is about is, like, I mean, in the end, he's human. Like, you can't expect somebody to have any sort of thoughts about something and give zero hint about what that is. You have to have some sort of belief that, especially if he's not, you know, overtly trying to badger people into a given conclusion, that people can think for themselves and think around that or acknowledge that and think, oh yeah, they love that project, that's their area, whatever. I mean, again, I kind of feel ambivalent. But I also, you know, I thought kind of like as some of these community members have presented that, you know, what if I were one of those homeowners and it's this big project being proposed right in my backyard, I would want to be able to go to my councilman and say, what is the deal with this project? What are they thinking? What are they planning? And I would want some, like, solid answers, and I would want some sense of direction. Like, does this person think this, the person who's representing this area and whose job it is to represent this area, I would want some indication of which way they're thinking about it. I mean, how could I vote for putting that person back on the council or pulling them away when you have no idea what they're thinking? That's a very weird thing to me. But then I also acknowledge that everyone across the board agrees that in these quasi-judicial arrangements, there's supposed to be no indication of what the person is thinking. It's confusing.
And then just to take that, just to elaborate on one of the things you said, that, you know, they're supposed to represent you and that sort of thing. What can a council person, or what can a someone who does represent you, what can they feel comfortable saying?
I don't know.
Before they get approached and say, hey, you know, this was out of line.
And that's part of the problem, right? We don't want to end up only selecting for, like, super sophisticated politicians can know exactly where that line is and always, I mean, otherwise you end up with people that might say no comment to everything,
right,
which might seem very sophisticated but be completely uninformative and not very, in my opinion, not what I would want from a council person.
I can go out and talk to a brick wall too. I can go out and talk to a brick wall and feel, you know, if I'm engaging in a conversation with another human being, you expect there to be some type of response.
Right. I mean,
even in this
scenario, we're all reading the same stuff and we're all going to have our thoughts. But the whole point of discussing it is that, you know, maybe in my sort of silo of thinking about this, I'm missing some salient point that you can bring forward. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. Let me adjust that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole point of, like, the whole process, I think, that there's more sort of knowledge in numbers than in the single. So you have to be a little open to listening to other people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think the whole thing kind of falls apart. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then again, you do have to be aware of the line and not, you know, prejudice things. And
yeah.
I don't know where that line is, but it's confusing.
And we're all going to define that line differently.
Yeah.
And some define it broadly and some define it less specifically.
But I think it's important to keep in mind that these kind of, you know, these projects, any kind of project, not specific necessarily to this one, but any of these projects that are on the horizon, there's a good deal of conversation. There's a good deal of procedure. There's a good deal of opportunity for neighborhood discussions and all of that before it gets to the point of presentation at a council meeting for preliminary approval after the planning commission has done its job. I mean, this isn't the first opportunity or the only opportunity that individuals concerned had to mm-hmm. have input into the process.
Yeah, I guess just to help move things forward, and again, I am still kind of ambivalent, but I would like to make a motion to accept the option two interpretation.
And everything else in the findings?
Yeah, we like those two.
Yes.
So even if, I think, you know, the community member brings forward a good point about the 1 year limit being rather arbitrary, and that certainly would be something that we could perhaps put on a future agenda item, but as this case was already, like, in progress anyway, right?
After you get a second, I can respond.
Oh, okay.
Is there a second on Faye's motion?
I second.
There's a
oh, excuse me, I misunderstood. I don't yet.
Okay.
I'm silent now.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Jose seconds the motion. Is there further
I could respond.
Yes, please.
To Faye's question. It's not a rule, it's an ordinance. But we're bound by the ordinance. That's how this board operates. So either the speaker can approach the council and ask the ordinance to be changed, or you can do so. But that wouldn't affect this case.
Okay, further discussion on Faye's motion to accept for opinion number two from the findings of fact. Are we ready for a vote?
I want to hear some more discussion.
Okay.
And I don't have anything to offer to it. I don't think.
Jose? Anything to add? At this
point. I'd just like to add that Faye made some excellent points. you know, it seems over the past few months that, you know, the focus of the hearing kind of moved from the initial, you know, what appeared to be an, you know, age of the format of the council member to one about, you know, the use of terms favorable to the project. And I think I was swayed in that it's, you know, including the three letters that were provided to this council, it was not enough, you know, to sway me in choosing option one over option two.
I was heavily leaning toward option one for a long time. I mean, certainly, not a long time being since we received this. Based on what we had, based on the opinions of the Ethical Practice Committee and the structure by which we find ourselves operating under. But then as I was reading more into this, I was looking at what was the vote really for. And the vote was actually more for, from my understanding, it was for the restricted development on a plan, as opposed to whether or not we were determining that Mr. Wojak had acted expected comments. So, and then as I was thinking more about it, I realized that, you know, Mr. Wojak should not have said what he did in terms of defining the project as being something special and the other term was special and wonderful. He should not have done that. Right. And clearly he should have reserved that comment for maybe a period after the vote was taken to express his appreciation for the acceptance of the plan or however he chose to do that. But I think because the real issue was voting for the plan and whether or not he swayed, I don't think he did sway the council. I think the council had enough information and based on the minutes of the meeting, for the council meeting, there was a huge document of information that supported this plan. So clearly people have done their homework, answered the questions and so forth. I would at this point look at option two as something I'd be favorable toward. Again, because the vote was on the restricted development final plan and not on Mr. Wojak's character.
But I mean, I was interested in that meeting and I asked about that question earlier. Mm-hmm. But in option one versus option two, there is nothing about that meeting that is not part of the criteria that I think that we are.
That meeting being which one are you talking
about?
The September meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whether it meets the restricted
development
criteria. If you look at option one and option two, there's nothing, and maybe it needs to be there and it's not there. I don't know, but I'm just saying for these two options, that is not part of this. Because I was thinking that too. Where does that meeting come into play, and should he
recuse
himself from, and should everybody that has a project in their ward or whatever they are called here recuse themselves when the project that's in their ward is going through that process? But then you come to these option one, option two, and that has nothing to do with what we are looking at. So I think to bring in that meeting on that is...
In option two, there is some stuff about whether or not how his vote was rendered at that council meeting, and was it based... So option two would say the vote rendered at the council meeting was based solely upon the applicable legal criteria for this project.
And that's what I was referring to, although I didn't identify the meeting.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
September meeting, yes. Mm-hmm.
Like the final, you know, one for...
And if you wish, I can always add that back in.
I think that would be a good idea to put that back in.
I may address that also, and I have some comment to make.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you.
Are you finished with yours so far? Okay. First of all, on option two, I just point out to you, Terry, that in paragraph five in your findings here on option two, there's where it says
about the middle of the page, about the middle of that paragraph where it says complainants submitted letters from the three advocates. So I'd strike the letters from. And I intend to vote for option two with some modifications. And I'd like to explain my vote and offer some amended provisions. I'd have greater concern here if the purpose of the September 19th, 2016 council meeting was a give and take guidance to the Planning Commission in assessing the project's compliance with applicable ordinance provisions. But the evidence submitted to us, as we've been discussing here, is essentially that the Planning Commission had done its assessment, had confirmed compliance, and was presenting it at that meeting for preliminary approval. I think the understandable concerns raised in good faith by Mr. Bransford are in fact reasonable, and from his and others' points of view, Councilman Wojcik crossed the line of impropriety when he refused the demands to recuse himself from voting on the matter in September. And in the testimony that we heard from Councilman Wojcik, he prefaced his testimony by saying, at least I heard him saying, that he had learned something from this and that he was going to be expanding on that a little bit, but then I think we got distracted and I really had intended to get him back to that to see what he thought he had learned from this process, because instead of appearing obstinate in the face of those demands that he recused, had Councilman Wojcik explained to the audience there what he testified to us here, and that is that his vote would reflect only whether, as assessed by the Planning Commission, the project plan met the applicable ordinance requirements, perhaps the appearance of impropriety would have dissipated. I drafted an amended paragraph 9 in option 2, and I'm proposing to add, as a separate paragraph, what I've drafted as paragraph 10. Before I read it, I'll provide copies around. Wait till you hear what he said. All right, what I'm proposing as a substitute paragraph 9 is based on a preponderance of the evidence submitted to it. The board concludes that A, complainant's allegation and respondent's denial have scant persuasive corroboration shown by the evidence. B, if on May 12, 2016, the respondent did indeed state that the project would be, quote, special and wonderful, end quote, or words to that effect, such statement by itself is insufficient evidence of the respondent's abiding bias and premeditation towards the project. And C, respondent's uncontroverted testimony indicates his vote rendered at the council meeting on September 16, 2016 was based solely upon the applicable ordinance criteria for the project. And then I would, as a separate paragraph 10, conclude by saying, 10, accordingly, for the above stated reasons, the board concludes the complainant has failed to prove any actionable violation of the city's code of ethics or opinion number 0901 by a preponderance of the evidence submitted to the board. Thank you.
it's just explaining my intent to vote no, and I would I guess I would be asking to amend the motion to allow for those modifications to option number two.
Madam Acting Chair, an easier way would be to ask for unanimous consent to allow the motion pending to be amended to reflect the changes made by member Collins.
All right. Without reiterating Terry's suggestion, because I might get it wrong, is there a motion to...
Is there unanimous consent?
For unanimous consent. Is there a motion, please?
No, just ask for unanimous consent.
Just ask. Okay. Is there anyone that does not want unanimous consent? Is there anyone that chooses not to accept their Lawrence's amendment? Hearing none.
Motion's amended.
Motion's amended.
The motion on the floor is to accept the proposed findings of fact with the changes that have been passed out.
That's already been seconded. We're still continuing with that discussion.
That's a motion as amended. It's pending.
All right. Further discussion as on the motion as it has been amended.
I think it does a good job of clarifying some of my confusion, just putting some things into specific dates and moves or processes that make it a little clearer than it was.
Is it fair to ask for a vote at this point?
First, you'd probably ask if there's further discussion.
Yeah. Further discussion. I never know whether you're going to further discuss it.
No, I'm trying to wait until I appreciate it. I want to see it. Because, you know, I gained so much from others' discussion that I don't like to preempt it.
Thank you for your consideration. Hearing no further discussion, the vote will be taken. All those in favor of option number two with the amendment as has been unanimously agreed to indicate by saying aye.
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 Those against, indicate by saying aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Ask for abstentions, please.
Are there abstentions? Thank you. Are there any abstentions on this?
Be two.
Yeah, two abstentions.
Madam Acting Chair, I assume that I can, that you don't want to see this back again until we'll have it signed and sent on.
Please.
I always like to sign.
I know you do.
Before you,
but I'll have to bring it back to another meeting. So you tell me what you want to do.
I'm fine.
All right. And I won't be here.
I promise, Lawrence, I'll read it very carefully to make sure that it reflects what you have listed. All right, the motion carries. At this point, I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Kay.
Okay, then the next item under open business is a survey of other cities' codes of ethics.
Madam Chair, in the fall of last year, the council reviewed the code of ethics at a committee of the whole meeting. I believe several of you were there. And asked the board, consider several topics, such as whether there should be an appeal process from a determination by the board, whether political contributions should amount to a conflict of interest. And they also asked about a section of the current ordinance that says a public official must report to the board when that official becomes aware of an unethical conduct by another city official. And the question was, at what point do you make that report? Is an anonymous letter or phone call enough? Is there something more than that? What is it? We also had an inquiry from a citizen, Ray Schmidt, who asked again about the political contributions. Should a council member be declared to have a conflict of interest if he or she handles a matter involving a person that has given money to that person, that federal official's campaign? In response, you asked me to survey other cities' ordinances as to how they might address these subjects, which I've done that. And that's the memo you have before you. At this point, just folks need to decide what else you want to do in response to those inquiries.
No.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, it was an interesting selection of cities. Yeah. How did you select the cities? Are these just all the ones that have?
No, it's certainly not. It's not the exclusive comprehensive. I tried to come up with some of the larger ones in Minnesota, and then after that, I just went to a search engine and put in some names. A number of cities outside the state didn't address the topic at all. I was taken aback by what East Lansing had done. I had never seen that anywhere else, and so I did include that. It's up to you what you want to do. Do you want further discussion or? I must tell you, I'm reminding what Council Member Collins said that really caught my attention is if I'm a proposed developer and I've got opponents on the City Council and I find out that there's a rule that says that a council member has a conflict if he or she receives political contributions from an interested party, you may have the opposite direct effect because I'm going to give a whole heck of a lot of money to those who oppose my project.
Well, you don't have to give much.
Or anything.
Yeah. Well, I guess then that kind of, I think there's one other reason that I kind of like the Michigan one, where it says if the council member believes that the contribution of the statute controls can refer to the purposes or official duties, including but not limited to actions related to the award of city contracts or businesses and votes taken on an intending or anticipated matter before the council. I mean, that would kind of cover that. Mm-hmm. So certainly the council member would have the option to say, no, I don't want your money. Right?
Okay.
I mean, I kind of like that. And the second part, I was kind of thinking that a percentage would be almost more informative than just a flat dollar amount. Like perhaps a percentage of the total money that the elected official received. Certainly, it seems to me if your contribution, regardless of the amount, happens to be 50% of what that person got, it's going to be hard for them not to be wanting to hear what your opinions are on various things before them. But I was kind of thinking like 5% or less, then, you know, potentially that wouldn't be enough to sway you into one direction.
Could I ask, what was the impetus for us to look at this again? I don't remember the context that we were doing, looking at.
Two sources. Number one, and I think it was the last day of October, the council put on a committee of the whole agenda a review of several provisions of the Code of Ordinances, the Code of Ethics in particular. Lawrence was there, I think, and Kay was there, and somebody else. But anyway, one of the council members said, we need to look at political contributions and whether or not that should be tied to conflicts of interest. And then Citizen Ray Schmitz writes a letter asking you to render opinion on that same issue. Who would be here today, but he's got pneumonia, and he doesn't want to give it to you.
Thank you.
Are we ready to discuss this tomorrow? I guess the feeling that I have at the moment is that a great deal of our attention has been taken up by the issues regarding Councilman Wojcik. And have we all had enough time to really give some real attention to this?
I can say I have not gone back to the Code of Ethics and looked at how this would fit in or wouldn't fit in or would not have it at all. So I have not given it the time.
Okay. I'd be open to a motion to continue this discussion at our next meeting, which would give everybody some time to really put the attention I think it's really necessary.
finish this. Since, well, Lynn, you've been on the ethics, the EPB from its very beginning.
But not continuously.
But not continuously, no, I understand. I just feel that our thoughts have been taken up considerably by the concerns of a citizen, and at the same time, the concerns of an office holder. And I would like very much if we could deal with this at our next meeting, having given it the time that it requires. And I would entertain a motion.
Motion to table this.
But wait, I guess that, Jerry, you won't be here.
That's fine. I don't need to be here.
Okay. All right.
Jason
will be here. That's exactly.
And obviously he's here. He's hearing this. He's read the material, so he'll be ready to assist you.
Okay.
I can perhaps give you some perspective as he worked in Fargo, Laramie, Wyoming, and Portland, Oregon. Okay. So he'll be have some perspective to share with you.
Good. That's great.
Okay. Yes. Because to my knowledge, this is the first time that we have really looked carefully, in some depth, I think, at all the features of the codes of our code of ethics. So I would be happy to entertain a motion that this be dealt with, that this be looked at carefully, and then discussed at our next meeting, the date of which we have not yet set.
Yeah, motion to.
We need a second. Yeah.
To propose, postpone this agenda item until the next meeting.
Second. Okay. What is the pleasure of the members of the board?
Yeah, I agree. But I think that this is just part of really a comprehensive reconsideration of the entire area, consistent with the public comments that we've heard.
Right.
Those are good points that we've heard. And just as an example, about 2 weeks ago, I overheard a legislator who had apparently become aware of the kinds of things that we're dealing with here, specifically a citizen authoring a complaint to this board, and then this board considering the citizen's complaint based upon comments as we had here by an elected official. In this instance here, it was obviously Wojcik, on a project that was kind of moving along. And this legislator said that I overheard, he said, I don't understand what we've come to if we have a city ordinance that allows or invites individuals to make complaints against elected officials similar to this. Then he used as the example, he said, and it was, I'm sure the example was called to mind because of the Super Bowl, but he said, this is a legislator, and he said, had there not been legislators who at the very beginning of the process would not have been saying this stadium proposal is going to be a wonderful thing, it's going to be a beautiful thing, it's going to be a real plus to the state, all these comments. If there weren't legislators who would have gotten behind that project at the beginning and had openly supported the concept of this fantastic new stadium, whether or not people ultimately agree with it or not, and then not be able to vote, he couldn't quite fathom, and he was equating that to what we're doing here, where you've got a council person who, at an earlier stage of a project, makes makes, you know, a general comment about the specialness of this project, and then not be able to vote. I mean, the in a perfect world, you would have somebody like Wojcik who would preface his statements of this being a special project by saying, before I say this, I want you to know that I may be called, that I will be called upon to vote after the Planning Commission does its job and so forth. And I, but when I do that, I'll be making my vote based upon my judgment of whether the ordinance requirements are complied with. So having said that, I just want you folks to know that this is a pretty special project. You know, to me, it's the ballot box that is the governing event with respect to public officials. Now, we do have in our code of ethics the provision that a public official, we have a mandatory provision in there where a public official who becomes aware of an ethical violation by another public official is required to make the complaint. And maybe what we need to do is just kind of take a step back and reconsider this entire area. And, you know, maybe we would arrive at something that would suggest that if individual citizens have cause for concern about the ethical propriety of an elected official, go to their own council person or go to another public official, state the case, and see if that public official will agree that there is some probable cause to believe that there's been an ethical violation. And then that public official would author the complaint to this board unless they have some other alternative. Obviously, in the case of the legislature, they've got their own internal ethics committees or whatever they might be. But here we're supposed to be doing, you know, this board is supposed to be doing that process. But you know, we would be opening the floodgates, if not already opened, to be. And in saying this, I'm not demeaning the good faith of Mr. Bransford in this case. You know, he did what he did based upon the ordinance as it is, and certainly the way the ordinance is written out invites individual complaints.
Are you suggesting that a rewriting of the ordinance that would prohibit the public from making any complaints about elected officials?
No.
Going through another elected official?
Well, I'm not at the point where I'm making that as a motion by any means.
Right.
I'm just saying that possibly we might have to deal with it in some way similar to that, or if there are amendments to that.
I
understand that you don't want it. I'm not about opening up any floodgates, but isn't the whole creation of the EPB meant as a public involvement in bringing issues of possible conflict of interest of elected officials or board commission members?
It could be, and maybe the filter is adequate that we have, that the first level of consideration is when the city attorney lets the board know that that this complaint has been presented. That maybe it's enough to say that our first dealing with it is to determine whether it should go forward or whether it should be dismissed. Maybe that is enough of a filter.
But that we have that possibility.
I know that,
right.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe that is enough of a filter if we're all made aware, and if we're all mindful of the fact that we do have that option.
Right, but it doesn't have to go on to a private investigation.
And most
ordinance appears on its own. It just seems that every one that we've handled recently has gone on to this investigator.
And maybe because that's been due to the inexperience of the composition of the board. I think that the one that was just resolved is the last one pending that was filed before the newly constituted board. So, you know, I guess I'd be satisfied by suggesting, instead of anything that I might have suggested, that there be a concerted effort of the members of the board to familiarize themselves with, you know, to be thoroughly familiar with the code and the process that we're going through. And maybe, in fact, I would make this as a motion, that as soon as the new city attorney feels prepared to do so, that he convene the board for the purpose of educating the board specifically with respect to what our duties and obligations are. I don't know what all of them are, frankly. I mean, and I've read the ordinance pretty carefully, but I would certainly, benefit from that kind of a presentation, kind of a tutorial, if you will.
Right.
And Terry's comments, anytime we've had something come up during the short time that this board has been constituted, his comments that have cautioned us and have guided us with respect to the legal things on an ad hoc basis have been very, very informative and very helpful. So I'm not suggesting that there's been any inadequacy. I'm just saying that, you know, at the outset of the newly constituted board here, that it would be comforting to me to know that we've all been educated with respect to what we're about here.
And Lawrence, that the composition of this board will change every year, so I think that's a wonderful idea. It doesn't do any of us any harm to be reminded of that from year to year as a new members may move in. So I concur with you. I think that would be a good use of our time with Mr. Luz as well.
I go back to a
conversation that we had here, I think, shortly after the Wojak censorship occurred within the council. And I think one of the comments, and I wasn't there, so I'm quoting from memory, was that there were concerns amongst the council members as to what can they say. There was some fear in them being able to say or represent projects or the constituency in such a way that they felt they were elected to do. That concerns me. It concerned me then, it concerns me now, that based on some of the research that Terry had done, based on what I see in our code of ethics, that there clearly needs to be either some further definition of what is expected or what can occur, or some revamping of what already exists. It says it was updated in 2017, but we are a constantly evolving body of people here. Thus, we have input coming in from a lot of different directions. We had the fortunate opportunity of having input coming from three citizens today, and I value that and appreciate that, and thank you for that. But that is an opportunity for us to take a look at what it is that governs us and see where changes can or should be made in order to make this a constantly evolving document that is useful to our community and for what we and for the purposes that we serve.
I think it's important that we do something like that before we dig into making a change to a specific mm-hmm. section, is maybe look at it as a whole and then maybe put a plan in place of what would be the process of mm-hmm. how we should manage it.
Then I would suggest, and I would be opening to someone making a motion that the board convene what we always call in the school board study sessions.
Do we already have a motion?
Well, we have one pending and seconded that would push back the survey until the next board meeting.
That's right. Yeah, and we have not taken a vote on that.
Right.
That would be pushing back the discussion of the the survey of the other coach and so forth, because obviously that also different discussions might happen as a result of adding this. And so I am suggesting, and I would accept a motion that that a board study session be set up at a time when everyone could come and would be led by Jason Luce, or is it Luce?
Luce.
The incoming city attorney. And a date and time to be set, which would enable as many members of the board to be here.
And this would be a substitute motion. So instead of the motion to just push back one item to your next agenda, you're substituting a new motion that asks the city attorney to schedule a study session at a time he deems appropriate for all this and all other issues.
Yeah, okay.
So can somebody make that motion? Apparently not.
No? Did you just... You can't make that motion.
No.
You have a motion. Board this size, you could. But
if I followed that, there would, even the council wouldn't have to make motions.
Right.
I'm not going to do that.
No. Okay. So,
did you move?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Which one?
I moved.
The substitution.
The substitution.
Good. Okay. That's
okay. Which would then take care of the motion to study the other code, the codes that exist from other.
Substitutes that for the first motion that would have simply pushed back the survey to the next
motion.
So if you approve this, you're substituting one motion for the other.
Right. Okay. And I think that's two votes, isn't it?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that first I'll accept a vote on that substitution of the one motion for the other.
Aye. On the question.
Aye. Yeah. Is this, you're asking for the vote now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Then all in favor of that substitute motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Then we can go on and note that the board have a study session.
That's the motion now before the board.
Would now be the motion before the board with the presence and the input of the city attorney. And
so moved.
Okay.
Well, it's already on the floor.
Yeah.
What would be the difference between a study session and just another meeting?
Typically, the study session is a single topic item where you're simply reviewing that one topic. You're not taking public comments.
Right.
You're not handling other business.
But it would be a public hearing.
Well, everything you do is open to the public.
Right.
And as Jason just pointed out, there would be no votes taken at your study session.
No.
Your study.
This is a means of an intense.
So just a more in-depth look?
Right.
What did you say?
Time devoted for that.
In-depth?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, as Lawrence knows, we're a young concept. And being a young concept, but yet dealing with issues that are important to people. Sometimes important to careers, I mean, important in other words, in many ways. I think that this would be a good time to do this.
Call for a vote.
Okay, then all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And anyone opposed?
All right, then the motion passes, and that, you know, I think this is a really good idea. I'd like to make a note that several months ago, I made the comment about my own feelings as the chair of this group and my frustration at not being able to give any kind of an opinion or make a statement. And, you know, I'm not, you know, maybe, you know, something that's similar to Michael Logic, the comment that Michael Logic had made showing his feeling about this project, I stated to you all very carefully that, you know, I found this frustrating. And I don't know that I noted, I may have, that I wasn't sure that it didn't somewhat conflict with the public good. Okay. So, all right, so we will be having a board study session, and, you know, I do think with everybody's schedule, it's going to probably be a bit of a challenge to come up with a time that works for everybody, but I think we can do it. I guess one of the things I do have to point out is that I will be done in April, and
we'll get to that the last item.
So, well, I just wanted to point out that is this wasted with the fact that new people will not be there, so that they will not have the benefit. You know, I don't know if there's an answer to that, but I do point it out as a...
There are two terms that expire on April 30th, Lynn's term and your term.
Yeah.
Under the charter's limitation, you're not eligible for
reappointment.
Lynn is, yeah. But when we get to that point, I'll describe the process.
Okay, so we will be going ahead then and working to set up a time, that this will work.
I'm sure.
May I suggest something? You know, no doubt Mr. Luce has a lot of things to prepare for, and I think rather than us set the time, I would suggest that we wait until he lets us know that he's prepared to accommodate that. I'm not sure how, on the ranking order of priorities of a city attorney coming into office where this might fall, but it seems to me that he's the one that ought to, at least in the first instance, decide when it would be appropriate. My suggestion, that's all.
Just coordinate that going forward. Coordinate that.
Yeah, I'm sure Jody and Jason will figure it out.
And then send an email out to us if we remember for consensus.
Jody is an expert at finding dates that work for everyone.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
She is. Yeah. So other things. Okay. So we will do that. Okay.
I mean, but do we have an expectation with respect to when we would expect that, or?
Well.
See, I just don't want to, my only point was I don't want to put undue pressure on, I'd rather make sure that it's done comprehensively.
I'm sure if you come forward and give us a date, that's going to be that would work.
I mean, do we want to say like within the next 2 months?
No, I don't think we want to say anything. That's at least that's my opinion.
He's hearing this discussion. He understands.
Okay. You know how important we are. We can be really tough.
This is really my first day, so this is the only thing I have to do right now.
Well,
you got to do it first. That works.
Okay, then that takes us to item number five, new business, review draft of the annual report for 2017. That I discovered after looking back in history that and Lynn's report, I'm working on that. So I have nothing to present right now, but I will have. It's being done carefully and thoroughly.
Okay.
Okay, then other business, terms of office.
Madam Chair, this is something that I started several years ago when I became thoroughly confused as to who was holding what term of office. There were five original appointees to this body, and what I've tried to do is keep the succession going under each original appointee. And so I just, first of all, give you this document so that you're all on board as far as who is holding what term of office. And then secondly, as I just mentioned, two terms are expiring on April 30th. The appointing committee, the practice is to advertise for the vacancy during the entire month of March. And I've already sent the memo to the city clerk asking her to do that very thing. And then in April, the people who apply by the end of March will be considered finalists, and we'll have that public hearing before the city council for purposes of comments. Council makes no appointment. It's the appointing committee that makes the appointment, and they will do so. Jody's working on a date in April for them to do that. And the new terms of office would take effect May the 1st.
Okay, who's on the appointing committee now?
President of RCTC, Chancellor of UMR, President of the Olmsted County Bar.
So whether they're acting or they could be the acting.
Sure.
Okay.
We had discussed enlarging that group, or at least having alternates that could step in the event of either vacancies in office or conflicts. Do you remember that?
Right. And I believe that the ordinance ultimately adopted allows, if they have a conflict themselves or have some, or just not available, of designating a successor. That's all I have on that topic.
Well, I will also note that I will be stepping down in May. That opens the filing period for elected office, for city offices.
And in which case, then they will, in addition to filling the two terms they're expecting to fill, they would probably use the same list of applicants to fill the vacancy.
Right.
Terry, just out of curiosity, there have been times, as I recall, that the number of people applying has been small. You know, perhaps with all of the publicity that we've had, you know, maybe hundreds.
There were times when we had problems getting applicants.
Yes.
That has not been a problem of late.
No, it hasn't.
We've had a large number of applicants.
Okay.
I'm sure Jason, through Jody, will monitor the number of applications that are received during the month of March. And if somebody needs to ring the bell and do some more publicity, Jason can let you know as the applications proceed. That's why I set aside an entire month for the purpose of gathering applications. That seems to be working. We've also expanded the coverage of the announcements.
Okay. I guess that takes care of first the coverage of the terms of office. And we will now go to setting the next meeting.
Did I miss, was there a comment made with respect to the annual report?
It's the chair's job to write it, and I'm working on it.
Last time at the hearing, we got all kinds of microphones and stuff, and this time,
They're not
microphones.
They're only recording.
Jody does, but for a formal hearing, the practice is to record in that case, but not for your normal meetings.
Yeah.
nice if they were microphones.
Yeah.
It's many times quite hard to, when you want to make sure you're understanding everything that everybody is saying, just this room makes it difficult.
Is that the next meeting?
Yep,
set the next meeting.
So what's on the agenda for the next meeting?
Well, let's see. We will be going over the annual report. We will be at that point, well, depending on when it is, probably the certainly the annual report.
And the practice has been, if there's really nothing on there, that sometimes the meetings have been rescheduled.
Yeah.
So that last week of March is the week before Easter, is that correct? Okay, I think Easter's on April Fool's Day, is what I heard this weekend.
Easter is April 1st.
Yeah, okay.
So we're thinking about what school
is going to bring to
people going away.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how that might impact folks. I have no conflicts.
I have not
during March.
I have not.
What time frame are we looking at?
Around a month out.
Yeah.
How about March? The 19th?
So we'd be talking about, actually, we'd be talking about the time frame before spring break.
Mondays or Tuesdays?
Good for me.
Yeah, they
work for me. Mondays, Tuesdays.
I would propose the 12th.
Okay.
Okay. The month from now.
Yeah.
I guess exactly.
Okay. How does the 12th seem, Jose? How is it for you? Your working scheduling is important.
I have a class right in the middle of that time in St. Paul. On Mondays and Wednesdays. Tuesdays would be ideal for me, but if that 12th works for everyone else, I can make it.
That what?
The 12th works for everyone else, mm-hmm. I can be here for that.
Tuesdays work for me too, so.
Okay. And Kim?
Yeah, the 12th is fine.
Okay, Faye?
Lauren?
Either is fine.
Oh, Jason. Oh, that's right. You're just. Okay.
My camera's wide open right now.
Right.
Is that okay, Lawrence?
Would that be subject to there being enough on the agenda to justify a meeting?
It always is.
Okay.
So the 12th was it decided?
The 12th.
At 1:15.
Is it easier for Jose to do the 13th? He said.
Yes. The 13th is not listed.
It is easier, but.
I mean, if it's all the same, call the rest of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
13th works.
So thank you.
Is that okay?
That's my senior seminar on legal studies, so I
really
appreciate it.
It's important.
So the 13th?
Okay, so the 13th. Tuesday the 13th.
1:15?
Yeah.
1:15.
Yeah. Here's my copy of the.
Oh, yes. And. Then, any of the materials?
Give them to Jody.
That's the tree.
And you should sit with 15. All right, the room.
It's available.
It's available? Okay. Tuesday, February 13th, here in this room at 1:15.
March.
Before you do so, I have something to say.
Yes.
Can I say it?
All right.
Okay. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank you, Terry, for all that you've given us, the advice, holding our hands, telling us when we worked in whatever order we were supposed to be in, clarifying things. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And your counsel has been valuable to us. I was privileged to experience it when this board first convened. And now I'm privileged to see you go up into another chapter of your life. And I wish you all the very best, and we all do. And thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you. This board has a special place in my heart because before 2008 or whenever it was, there was no mechanism in place to respond to those who said there's an ethics problem here. And the council turned to me and said, all right, Atkins, go out and fix this. And I tried my best. I used other city ordinances as guides and came up with the scheme that we have now. And I understand there are some that feel that it's not working well and perhaps a better job could be done. But I still believe what we have is working. I mean, you just resolved a matter that came before you by the way you're supposed to do it. You applied the law, you listened to the testimony, and you came up with your decision. I understand there's always room for improvement, and I know Jason will help you in that regard. But I do believe the city is better off having a board in place that can respond to those types of allegations. And a board that's independent. And I tell others in my line of work how we appoint members to this board, and there are meetings, because the mayor and the council are not involved. So I wish you nothing but good luck in the future, and hope that you continue to fine-tune the process, because I think it does help the city. And with that, Jason, it's all yours.
And we welcome you, Jason.
Yes, welcome, Jason. And again, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've taught us a lot. And Lawrence's entering the board has also been another educational tool from a slightly different position, professional position. So,
I can't tell what you want to say with your. You have a very strong expression. I don't know what it means.
I really appreciate the fact that Lawrence weighs until those of us that don't have that kind of experience had a chance to speak, and then, that's very, very important. Thank you.
All right. So I'll accept a motion for adjournment.
So
moved. Okay.
Second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll be right up. You wait a minute.
Okay, you might have to write that down. It's like really couldn't hear you very well. Better write. Just write that down on the back there.
Yes.
Can you write that down right there?
Okay. Thanks.